world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
This week on Parents Are Hard to Raise, 6 red flags you're getting bad medical advice, current elder scams you need to alert your parents to, and this week's survival tip will have you faking it till you make it.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I got an email this week from Ruth Ann from Roswell, New Mexico, and she had listened to our show last week on Alzheimer's, and she asked me, is her dad's forgetfulness and mixing up appointments cause to think he has Alzheimer's? And Ruth Ann, what I want to say to you is, of course, if you have any concerns that you see, you know, take your dad to the doctor. That's the best thing. But, you know, we all can forget a word or forget an appointment. I forget appointments all the time. You know, we get busy, we get crazy. We can forget where we left our car keys. My husband, a lot of times, he loses his car keys all the time. So, you know, small memory lapses happen. But if you have any concerns, please just take your dad to the doctor. That's the simplest thing, you know, and that will ease your mind. One symptom of a more serious memory loss is that the person isn't aware that it's a problem, the person it's happening to. So I'll give you some examples of what's normal forgetfulness and what might be cause for concern. So if you forget a daily appointment, you know, you forget you had a dentist appointment, but then you remember it later. That's normal. If you ask over and over again, you know, your daughter, your son or daughter, over and over again, did I go to the doctor? Did I go to the doctor? That might be cause for concern. Normal, you make a mistake balancing your checkbook. Cause for concern would be you can't do anything that involves numbers or like following a recipe or pay monthly bills. It's hard to do those things. It's hard to solve any kind of problem or plan anything that you used to be able to do. Normal, you know, you need help with the TV remote. I need help with that a lot because they're crazy, those TV remotes. But what could be cause for concern is you can't work the stove anymore. You forget to turn how to turn on the stove, or you forget to turn off the stove, or you can't drive to a familiar spot. Normal, you forget what day of the week is, but what day of the week it is, but then you remember later. Cause for concern, you find yourself in a place and you don't know how you got there. Normal, you have age-related vision changes. Cause for concern is you pass a mirror and you don't know, you don't recognize the reflection that it's you. Normal, you can't find the right word immediately. Cause for concern, you call things by the wrong names, or you stop in the middle of a sentence and have no idea what you were saying. Normal, you misplace your glasses or remote from time to time. Cause for concern is you put things in weird places and you can't retrace your steps. And finally, you have your own way of doing things, and, you know, if somebody does it differently than you, you get kind of grumpy. Cause for concern is you would get upset very easily when your routine changes and when you're out of your comfort zone. You get confused or anxious or suspicious or afraid. So those are signs. But Ruth Ann, by all means, you know, if any of, you know, anything seems familiar or anything is cause for concern, you just take your dad to the doctor. That would be the safest thing for you to do. We had talked last week about, you know, how an Alzheimer's patient is in their environment and some tips. Alzheimer's patients get confused very easily. So you don't want to confuse them more. You want to ask questions with yes or no answers. And use, when you're speaking with them, we had said before, make sure they're standing in front of you, it's quiet, and that they can see you. Always call them by their name and use short, positive, clear statements so they can understand what you mean. And if you have to repeat yourself using the same words, and you can repeat yourself 2-3 times, that's okay. That is more reassuring to them. Sometimes it takes them a while to understand. Don't, you know, for instance, use positive words. Don't say, don't move. Say, stand still, so they can understand, they can visualize. Use memory aids. Put things on a calendar in the day. Start from the very beginning. Eat breakfast. Take a bath. Go for a walk. You know, you want to put everything that they need to do in that day in there. You can put name tags on objects, put bright colored stickers on glass doors. Use pictures to communicate. We had said that sometimes talking and the pictures. You can put pictures on the bedroom door, put a picture of a bed on the bedroom door, a picture of a toilet on the bathroom door. Make memory books with your parents, pictures of family, of places you've gone together. You can put a sign no on things that you don't want touched. Paint the bathroom door a bright color so they remember where to go. Get a bright colored toilet seat that you put on the toilet. Allow plenty of time for any task they're doing and thank them for doing the task. And if they can't finish something, say, oh, what a great job you did on the part that they did finish. And try to move them on to something else so they don't get frustrated that they couldn't finish what they started. If the person starts pacing or wandering, if mom or dad starts doing that, try to look, you know, for a pattern, try to think, did they go to the bathroom? You know, maybe we have to shorten the breaks. Maybe you have them go into the bathroom every 3 hours. Maybe you have to do two. Maybe they're hungry. It's that time of day. Maybe they're thirsty. So look for a pattern and first try to figure out why they're doing that. If they're pacing, a lot of times they just have to do that, and you can allow them to do that, especially if they're in their own home. You just want to make sure that they're not going to get hurt on anything, on any furniture. I had a client who he would pace around the living room. He would just go around, you know, so many times in the living room, and then he would go to a desk in the living room and touch everything on the desk. That's just what he would do. That would be just something he would do. And you would just let him do it. There was nothing that he could get hurt doing, so you let them do it. It is, I know it's frustrating for you, you know, the other person in the room, but it can calm them. If a person is wandering, approach them very calmly and walk with them initially, and then gradually guide them back to where they have to go, because you don't want to startle them. You don't want to yell at them. You don't want to grab them, because that will make it worse. They could react. You know, they're getting startled. They're scared. They don't understand. So everything, anytime you're dealing with an Alzheimer's patient, you want to just be calm and everything be quiet. Try giving them purposeful activities, you know, folding clothes, dusting, so they can see they're doing something, you know, they're getting something done. If they start to get agitated, give them a stuffed animal to cuddle. I had talked on a previous show about those mechanical cats. You know, they purr, they can sit on a person's lap, and they calm an Alzheimer's patient. They can pet them, they purr, they can name them. Exercise, walk the same time every day. Maybe take a walk in the morning after breakfast, and then maybe a walk after lunch, but do it the same time every day. Keep lights on at night. people, sometimes with Alzheimer's patients, people will wander when they're in shoes, but when they put their slippers on, they won't. So, you know, if you find that they get agitated in the afternoon or at night, put slippers on them. Make sure they have rubber-soled slippers. Make sure the slippers fit well. I visited a patient where his mom would wear, she had Alzheimer's and she would pace, but she was wearing sneakers, you know, that had a back that tied, but she was wearing them where she didn't have her foot fully in the sneaker, and she kept tripping. And I said to him, no, how about slippers? We have to have something where she won't fall and trip. So use alarms on doors, bells, motion sensors. They have bed alarms. They're flat strips that they're laid under the sheets that make a sound when an Alzheimer's, you know, when a patient gets up. On outside doors, you lock them, you know, even during the day, put bells and alarms on them, motion sensors in the hallways, on stairs, porches, decks, use child safety gates. And if you need height, you know, use two gates, one on top of the other. Child-resistant locks on doors and windows. Put black mats on the ground in front of outside doors. Paint the porch black. Patients with Alzheimer's disease, often they won't step on or over a black area. Make sure the person has an ID bracelet that's engraved with their name, address, and phone number. Keep a recent photograph of them and a piece of clothing that they've worn recently in case, you know, that they do wander and the police are called and they have dogs, you know, that can find them. They also have tracking systems for Alzheimer's patients. So you can look into them. The Alzheimer's Association, you can go on their website. You can go on the medicalalert.org Safe Return website and projectlifesaver.org. And these things will be on my website as well. In your environment, don't rearrange the furniture. I mean, you don't want to cause anxiety, but if someone has been recently diagnosed with or Alzheimer's, you know, maybe move the furniture at that time just so it's not so much clutter. You know, there's clutter, throw rugs where they can hurt themselves. But if if they've had Alzheimer's and then all of a sudden you start rearranging everything, that can make them anxious. Don't wax your floors. Keep plastic bags out of reach. Cords. Remove artificial fruit, vegetables, or food shape, you know, kitchen magnets that are on the refrigerator, they may try to eat them. You know, they may mistake them for fruit or a vegetable. Remove little, you know, coins, safety pins, small objects, because they may try to eat those as well. Cover the thermostat so they can't control the heat or the air conditioning. They have covers for that. Stove. Where you can remove the control knobs for the stove. Unplug appliances when they're not in use. Put red tape around the radiators and heating vents just for safety reasons. If your mom or dad, you know, starts becoming aggressive or agitated, just make sure they aren't in pain. Sometimes that agitation is the sign that the person is in pain, you know, has a toothache, maybe has a urinary tract infection. Do they have a fever? You want to reduce any triggers or, you know, situations or things that will lead to agitation. Noise is a big one. Crowds, a lot of people coming into the house, you know, where there's a lot of noise going on. Change of routine, glaring lights, TV, loud television or violent shows, darkness. Always use calm, soothing words and calm speech patterns. Always check, you know, if the person is hungry or thirsty or has to use the bathroom. That might just be making them agitated. try to redirect their attention. Don't argue. Don't make sudden movements. Don't criticize. Don't raise your voice. Try to redirect them. Sometimes you can redirect them, you know, with a favorite food. Alzheimer's disease has been staged by different people. Typically, there's three stages. Some people stage into seven, you know, but three stages. Stage one is where their recent short-term memory starts to go. They're disoriented. They have show a lack of interest in doing things, can't concentrate, mood swings, become irritable. They start not taking care of their appearance. Stage two, increased memory loss. They may forget family and some friends. Their speech may start to slur. They can't find the right words, can't follow direction, may have hallucinations or delusions. They need assistance in bathing, dressing, doing routine things. They can't read or write or add or subtract. They can't distinguish between hot and cold. They're restless, they're agitated, you start to see behavior changes, their temper flares up. Stage three is that total disorientation, total dependency on others for care. They become incontinent, they can't communicate except for grunting or screaming or groaning. Usually they can't walk any longer, so they're bedbound. They have difficulty swallowing. Seizures. Alzheimer's disease is considered a fatal disease. As the disease progresses and the patient loses their memory as well as mental and physical functioning, the disease process itself isn't considered deadly, but it's the symptoms and the consequences of the disease that make it lethal. People can live with Alzheimer's 10 to 15 years after the initial diagnosis if they're otherwise healthy. In the end stage, that's when Alzheimer's impacts the person's balance, their walking, their swallowing, and their cause of death is usually related to the complications of their immobility, their fall, like a fall, pneumonia, a urinary tract infection, pressure sores, bed sores, they aspirate. There's currently no cure for Alzheimer's disease. There's available treatments which can slow down the progression. Today, there's five drugs that are approved to treat Alzheimer's disease. Sometimes other medications are prescribed in addition to those drugs, you know, antidepressants, anti-anxiety to treat some of the behavioral problems. Sometimes we use some of the things I mentioned before, some kinds of therapy. For instance, one thing we call is reality orientation for Alzheimer's patients. That's using the calendars to list everything that's happening in that day. In the early stages, that's useful because the person is confused but not totally disoriented. So you can point out the day on the calendar, show them the calendar, point out the day, and you can show them everything that's listed to do today. You know, take a bath, take a walk, eat lunch, play cards. Say, you know, Mom, this is what we're going to do today. And that keeps Mom in touch with the world around her, and it makes her feel like she's involved in what she's doing. She's still in control. There's validation therapy where what we're doing, we give value or approving what Mom believes. It's not harmful if it's, I'll give you an example. Don't try, because we don't want to try to reorient Mom to her current circumstances. For instance, you know, we see go to lunch and Mom says, oh, have lunch is on the calendar. And Mom says, oh, I'm not going to eat lunch today because I'm going out to dinner with Dad. And your dad has been deceased for 5 years. So you don't want to say, Mom, we don't take you to restaurants anymore and Dad is dead. We don't want to do that. So what you want to do is just say to her, Mom, you know, what restaurant are you going to go to? And she'll tell you, and you're going to say, Mom, what are you going to eat? And she'll tell you and say, well, what time are you going out to dinner. And she'll tell you, and you say, well, you know what? I think maybe you should eat a good lunch now, because sometimes that restaurant, do you remember those services are slow? It's very slow. The waiters and waitresses, they don't have a lot of waiters and waitresses, and you might get hungry while you're waiting. So that isn't harmful to play along. So, you know, mom, you take her seriously, and she doesn't think she's crazy. Because if you tell her and you bring her back to reality, it's going to confuse her, and it may make her, you know, more frustrated and more agitated. And one other therapy, reminiscence therapy, where you always want to encourage reminiscing, talk about the past. Ask details, talk about the war, you know, if your dad was in the war, if your mom was a secretary, you know, to the president of a college, mom, what did you do? What did that, you know, what was that college you worked at? What did you do there? Because you're taking an interest in them, and they feel they were a competent person who was responsible. And that helps boost, you know, their self-esteem. And finally, activity therapy, where definitely you want to keep them active. Do puzzles with them. If your mom loved to bake, bake with them. Maybe she can't follow the recipe, but you can do it together. And you could say, now we need eggs, you know, step by step. Listen to music, walk. Definitely take walks. Keep the person active. I hope these tips on how to deal with mom or dad who has Alzheimer's disease, or your spouse or your brother or sister, I hope these tips have helped you. And please, if you have any questions, email me. I'll be happy to answer them. And when we come back from the break, the 6 red flags that you're getting bad advice.
She's always been there for you. She taught you how to ride a bike, tie your shoes, make your bed, blow your nose. She nursed you through the chicken pox and that nasty stomach flu. She was there on your first day of kindergarten, just out of sight, peeking through the window, her heart breaking just a little. You were growing up so fast. She knew just what to do to make it all better when you skinned your knee, came home with bubble gum in your hair, and got your heart broken for the very first time. Now, she needs you, and you have no idea how to help. You're not alone. Since 1982, we've been helping people just like you find answers to the problems you're facing right at this moment. Life is so much more complex than it was when we were kids. The stresses you and I face today are greater than they ever were for our parents when they were our age. We're pulled in so many directions at once. There never seems to be enough hours in the day. And no matter how much you do or where you turn, it still feels like you're letting someone down. These are the kinds of problems that can tear families apart. The good news is, you're in the right place. There are solutions, and we'll help you find them. We are the men and women of MedX Home Care, and for over 35 years, we've been helping families just like yours grow older together.
Hit it. So, the 6 red flags that you're getting bad advice. Most people genuinely try to be helpful, but sometimes you get the wrong advice. It can come from someone who means well, but doesn't know all the facts, and so gives you bad advice. So number one, the person isn't qualified. Everyone has an opinion, but that doesn't mean their thoughts are valuable or people know what they're talking about. If the advice from a person who has a background that has nothing to do with what you're asking, feel free to ignore that advice. Number two, the advice isn't tailored to you. The person doesn't know your circumstances or your experience. So a lot of times people give advice based on their own experiences. Number three, the person talks but doesn't listen. So if the advice you're getting is filled with, you should do this and you should do that, be cautious. Good advice requires that a person asks you questions and listens to what you have to say before advising you. Number four, the advice is focused on the end result and not the process. So the evaluation process is just as important as the final answer, because if you evaluate the pros and cons of your options, it not only helps you make a better decision, but you also will not, if you feel like you didn't make the right decision, won't be as feel that you'll regret your decision because you did list the pros and cons. You looked at both sides. Number five, the advice is emotionally charged. When you look for advice from someone else, it's because you want objectivity, a thoughtful second opinion. And number six, the advice ruffles your instincts. So if you have that intuition that says, oh, I don't think that's right, listen to your intuition. Because when you ask for advice, you often do that because you want to know what to do. But sometimes we second guess ourselves. We already know what to do, but we want to get another opinion. And if that opinion just doesn't feel right to us, just don't listen. I work with a consultant who is an expert in personal security, and he was telling me about all these scams that are going on, especially with the elderly. And I am going to have him on in a future show, but I just wanted to tell you one or two of them that are happening because I just didn't want to wait. There's one scam that, did you hear about the break-ins down the street, where a home security company representative comes with news that there's burglars have hit several homes in your area, and he offers a free home security check. And once he's inside, he might steal money or plan. He can take a look at your home and plan a future burglary. Also, a package for you. You receive this heavy package, COD, by a messenger who tells you it was ordered by someone you know. You hand over the money, and when you open it up, you find it's just old newspapers or magazines used as weight for the package. And finally, this is terrible. Help me, Grandma. Your grandson calls. His voice is muffled, so it's not your grandson, but his message is clear. He's in big trouble. Either he's been arrested, he's short on the rent, or he's stranded on vacation. He asks you to please send money, but begs you not to tell his parents. So there you have it. There are just a few. But we'll be having this personal security expert on a future show. And finally, my survival tip of the week. Fake a smile. Forcing yourself to smile, even if it's a fake grin, can make you feel better. Smiling produces physiological as well as psychological benefits. So when you smile, you're engaging your face, and that's kind of weird to the rest of the brain. But if your face is forcing your brain to think it's happy, then you feel somewhat better. So that's all the time we have this week. If this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who it would help, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 17, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. That's Diane with one N, B-E-R-A-R-D-I. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.